Okay, today's topic is a fresh challah. And what is a fresh challah? It's an introduction. When you bake something that's bread-like, that means bread, cookies, pizza, all kinds of things that are like that, and it's made from one of the five primary grains, that is wheat, spelt, rye, barley, or oats, and the dough is owned by somebody Jewish, then you have to take off a piece of it, and that piece that we separate, we call that challah. Okay, now nowadays, the dough and kohanim are all tamei, so in theory, the challah should go to a kohen and he should eat it, but since the kohen and the challah are tamei, therefore we burn it or we destroy it once we made the separation. excuse me. Okay. Now, I mentioned a whole bunch of things like that are bread-like, like bread and cookies and pizza. Those are all made from thicker doughs, you know, heavier doughs. We call those a blila ava. There's also a mitzvah to do a first challah for blila raka, that is to say like a pourable batter, like what you'd use to make a sheet cake or pancakes. Now, at home, most people have never seen a first challah for a blila raka, excuse me, because there's so little flour in the mixture that there's never a shir challah. We're going to talk about shir challah in a second, that there's not a shir challah in it, so they never saw it at home. But in a bakery, something that's more commercial, then is very possible that the amount of flour in there, the cake or the batter that they're making is going to be large enough. There's going to be a shir challah, and the different they are chayvim challah, they are chayvim hafreshes challah. But the big difference being that when you do a regular hafreshes challah for a regular batter, what we call a blila ava, then you do the hafresha from as soon as you mix the flour and water together. From then on is the time that you can do separate challah. While for blila raka, when like making a sheet cake, then you can only do hafresha after they've been baked. Okay, so anyhow, so like I just said, with the mitzvah starts when you mix the flour and water together for a typical batter. But that's the decision point to decide whether it's chayv and challah, which is to say is, at that point, when the flour and water got mixed together, was it owned by somebody Jewish or was it not? So if a Jewish person owns it and it has a shir challah, has enough flour in it to be chayv in the mitzvah, then yes, then it's chayv. If it's somebody belongs to someone not Jewish at that time, you're not chayv. Even if a Jew buys it later on, you're not chayv and challah. What happens if it's a shutfis, like partial ownership, let's say in a company, it's a different ownerships, then the din is, if the amount of the Jew's ownership would be enough to be chayim l'challah, then you're chayim l'challah. So, for example, a bakery makes a dough out of 50 pounds of flour, and the Jewish person has a 20% ownership, so that means as of this dough, 20% or 10 pounds of the dough are owned by a Jewish person. Well, 10 pounds is definitely a shir challah, and therefore this dough requires hafreshes challah. If the Jew had a smaller shir, or the dough was smaller to the point that there was not a shir challah, then there would not be a chiv hafreshes challah. Okay, what is the shir challah? I mentioned a few times. There's a shir challah, it means there's a minimum amount that if you have need to have that much flour in the mixture in order to be chayim challah. So the shir challah is actually a volumetric shir. It's a certain amount of size. It's not an amount of weight. It's much more convenient, but for people to work in weight. And I'm going to mention what the shir is in weight. But before I mention, I have to say is that being as the shir is volumetric, it's really not by weight. The shir in weight depends on the type of flour you're using. Meaning, not every flour takes up the same amount of space. There's actually quite a dramatic difference sometimes between one and the other, as I'm going to say in a second. And one more thing to mention is that there's different opinions as to how to translate the shiurim into our modern measures. And so what we do is, we do hafresha without a bracha, if you meet a smaller shiur, and we don't make a bracha because of a question of whether you need a bracha or not. You don't make the bracha on hafreshes challah until there's a larger shiur. So I'm going to mention a number of flours, and tell you each one of the shear with or without a bracha. So the most common one that people use, just plain white flour made from wheat. So we make hafresha without a bracha for 2.5 pounds, and hafresha with a bracha for 4.7 pounds. Okay, and whole wheat flour has a shayla, not for today, but has a shayla. I'm going to assume that a whole wheat flour is just a drop less of 2.3 pounds without a bracha, or 4.4 pounds with a bracha. But then, as we move into other, spelt flour is just about the same. just about the same as whole wheat flour, 2.4 pounds and 4.7 pounds. But if we move to rye flour, it's you make hafarsha without a bracha at 2 pounds and with a bracha at 3.8 pounds. And then when we move to oats, oat flour is we make a hafarsha without a bracha at 1.8 pounds, hafarsha with a bracha at 3.5 pounds. Or oatmeal, which is even which is a little fluffier, we make hafarsha without a bracha at 1.6 pounds and hafarsha with a bracha at 3.1 pounds. So you can see it's quite a dramatic difference. I mean, it's a nice amount more, you know. In regular flour, we make a hafarsha without a bracha at 2.5 pounds, and an oatmeal at 1.6 pounds. So quite a difference between the shirim. I mean, the shear is, of course, the same for each of them. In volume, it's really the same shear, but in weight, it comes out a different amount depending on which flour you use. Now, two things that are not really for, we're not going to talk about today, is that two opposite things that we're not going to talk about, and they are. And sometimes, we could have two batches of dough that were made, and each one of them does not have a shir challah, but they could somehow be combined together to have a shir challah, and that's called tzir of sal. They could be combined even after baking in a way that makes them be chayim challah. That's called tzir of sal. And the other one is the opposite of that, and that is that sometimes there is a shir challah in the dough, but the finished product is going to be baked in different places in ways that all, and each one of those places will have less than a shir challah. That in those cases, there are times when that means that you're not chayim challah, even though when you made the dough originally, did have a shir challah. That's called the isa asuri l'chalik. Again, that's another thing we're not going to talk about, another complicated topic, not for today. Okay, now, most of what we're going to talk about today is the following, which is, How is a fresh challah done commercially? At home, it's pretty straightforward. The person makes a dough, assuming they had a shir challah, they're Jewish, they made a shir challah, and they separate the piece out and then take care of it. But commercially, there are four ways that I'm aware of how fresh challah is done. The first two tend to be used in retail bakeries, like in your local bakery in your neighborhood, and the latter two are tend to be more used in like commercial operations and big commercial bakeries. Okay, so the first one is the simplest. It's the traditional way. You make sure that there's a Shomer Shabbos person at the baking when they need the dough, and that person is Mafresh Challah. So again, think about your local bakery. Either the owner is there or someone there with Shomer Shabbos working there, and he's always there when they need the dough, and every time they make a dough, he takes off a piece and he's Mafresh Challah in the good old-fashioned traditional way. That's the most simple and the most straightforward, if it's possible, if it works. Okay, the second is what we call a dough ball, and that is there's no Shomer Shabbos person going to be there when they're kneading. Think about it. Most bakeries are making their doughs in the middle of the night, so there's nobody, no person from Shomer Shabbos there during the night. But what they do is the people who are there during the night, they take a little piece of dough from each time they make a batter. They take out a little piece, make a little ball of dough, and they put it to the corner. They put it someplace. And then in the morning, when the Shomer Shabbos person shows up, and he sees, oh, last night they made 8 batches of dough, and I see my 8 little dough balls over here. And then what he does is he's Mafresh Challah from those 8 balls. Most people assume is, what most people practice is, that they don't take that whole ball of dough as the challah. They take a piece from the dough ball, from each of the dough balls, and make that the hafarsha challah. One piece for each of the doughs that was made. It's not clear if that's really required, but that's assumed that they have to do that to fulfill the requirement of shi'aran mikarim. Not clear if that's really true, but that's what most people assume. So they take, of the 8, when there'll be 8 pieces there, from each piece they'll take off half of the piece and say, this is the challah, and the other part is not the challah. There is a little bit of question about whether you should really trust people like that. I mean, think about it. The people during the night who are taking off the dough are not Shomer Shabbos. It's not clear, but people who do this are assuming that they can trust them, that the pieces that they take off, they match up, they say, well, we know you made 8 batches, and we know we see 8 batches, and then they trust them. Okay, now the third one is people make tevel. Tevel means to say is a dough that no one was mafresh challah from, and they make a dough that's chayiv and challah, means for sure has the amount that's chayiv and challah, but they are not mafresh challah, and And then what they do is they either take this dough and they freeze it as is, or they bake it into something like a matzah. And again, both of these things, they do not do a freshest challah, and then they leave them in the bakery where the baking is going to be done in the future. And what they do is every day, the Mashiach takes says that part of the batter or part of the dough or part of the matzah, I'm sorry, that's there in the bakery is going to be hafrasha for the things that were made in the bakery. Okay, usually he does this remotely, meaning that the Mashgiach does not show up to do this live. He does this, he sits in his house and he says, for that bakery, and we're going to talk about the details, and he actually doesn't even really know how many things they made that day. So he says, whatever they're going to make today, I want hafrasha to happen a little bit for each one of them. We're going to talk a little more about this in a minute. So this is a third way they do it. They use tevel. So they leave tevel in the bakery, and the tevel is, there's enough tevel in there that they can keep making little hafrashas from that tevel day after day until they use it up. And the last is there are some places where they avoid hafrashas challah by selling the flour to someone who's not Jewish before the kneading. I said beforehand that if a non-Jewish person owns it at the time when you mix the flour and water, there's no chiv of freshes challah. So what they do is they sell the flour to someone who's not Jewish, and then they never chayv in challah. They're not doing anything about freshes challah. So the first three were ways of performing freshes challah, and this fourth way is a way of saying, we're not going to perform freshes challah. We're just going to do things to avoid the chiv of freshes challah. Okay. So now let's talk some more detail about this tevel system. I'm going to talk about three different types of topics. So the first is time-related issues. Okay, and the first thing I'm going to say about time-related things is I'm going to mention the most significant issue with tevel matzah. Okay, it's somewhat of an issue for tevel dough, but it's even much more significant for tevel matzah, and that is that when a person is mafresh challah, they need to be mafresh challah from take the challah from dough that grew in the same Jewish calendar year as what they're doing the hafrasha on. So for a couple of months of the year, a month or two, usually towards the end of the summer and the early fall, the factories are already, the bakeries and the factories are using flour that already grew in the current Jewish year, but the tevel matzah was made from the previous year. In other words, let's say in September, this flour was grown during this Jewish year. Right now it's Tavshin Ayin Beis, is it? No, Pei Beis, I'm sorry, Pei Beis. Tavshin Pei Beis. So they'll be using flour that grew during Tavshin Pei Beis. It was planted in this winter or the spring, and it grew in Tavshin Pei Beis. But the matzah that they're using is from Tavshin Pei Aleph. The tevel matzah that they have was made in the previous year. It takes a long time until the tevel matzah made in Tavshin Pei Beis actually makes it to the bakery. So during that, there's a whole long amount of time when the tevel matzah and the tevel and the things that are being baked in the bakery are not from the same years. Now, there are things to do to make that period of time as short as possible, maybe just down to maybe even a couple of weeks. But it's impossible to avoid this problem. There will always be weeks that the tevel and the food that you're baking are not from flour of the same year. Ravelsky had a reason to maybe ignore this problem in Chutz Aretz, but the Eved, most Pesachim were not very happy about that. Now, as I mentioned, this is more of an issue for tevel matzah than for tevel dough, and the reason is because for tevel dough, the tevel dough is made in the actual bakery itself. The bakery, they make a batter, and they say, okay, this is what we're putting aside, as we're going to use this as tevel, we won't have fresh on this. Well, that means is the Mashgiach can know when the new flour comes in from the year. It's something that the bakeries know when they're starting to get flour from the new year, and the new spring wheat or the new winter wheat, and he can then make a new batch. He can create a new batch of tevel when the time comes, rather than just keep using the old stuff. But with tevel matzah, his hands are tied because he can't do anything until he gets new tevel matzah from the one bakery in the country that makes it. So that's an issue with time-related things. Okay, another thing is that every day the Mashgiach, as I had mentioned, is going to say a certain nusach. He's going to say a text every day that says that he wants to make every time a new batter is created. I want to make a hafrasha, because I'm going to read you a sample of the kind of text that he would say. And of course, I did say, 30 minutes after every batter of dough is kneaded in bakery X, here's his name, the bakery, a gram of tevel dough located next to the previously designated piece should be designated as challah for that new batter. In the case of a blue laraka batter, the hafrasha should take place 30 minutes after baking instead of 30 minutes after kneading. This system of continued hafrasha should remain in effect until I verbally cancel it or recite a new system of continual hafrasha. Okay, so that's the kind of a nusuk that the person would say. That's not what you say the first day. When you set up this tevel, you say something a little longer, the first designation. But once the first one is there, and you did the first hafrasha, every day you say something like what I just mentioned a second ago. So the first thing is like this. What happens, I'm saying that every morning I say, I want this hafrasha to work for every batter that's made between now until the next time I say this. Well, what happens if flour arrives after I made this declaration and before I said it again? So I said, let's say the person said the declaration on Friday, and then he doesn't say it again until Monday, but on Friday afternoon, more flour comes in and they bake with it on Shabbos. Okay, so seemingly, he's doing hafrasha on the davar shalei bal olam, and it may not be effective to do the hafrasha. The second thing is that if in the case that I just said to you, he does it on Friday and doesn't say it again until Monday, then he's effectively set up a hafrasha challah to happen on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do a hafrasha challah on Shabbos. It's a question whether you're allowed to do it like this, where it happens automatically, but he's setting himself up for that kind of an issue. Okay, so in truth, both of those things that I just mentioned could be avoided if we would switch around the nusach. And you would be saying, instead of saying, I want to make a hafrasha for every batch of dough that will be made, I say, I'm making a hafrasha for every batch of dough that was already made. Which actually, in a challah chutz, you're actually allowed to do. That's okay to do that. As long as they weren't all eaten yet, you're allowed to do that. If you would do that, then he would have solved both these problems. But then you just have to make sure he does it before the whole batch gets eaten, which is probably not such a big deal. Okay, now, the next group of issues has to do with remote hafrasha. Okay, and that is, as I mentioned, this tevel system is commonly means that the Mashiach does not show up at the factory, either because he's, you know, hundreds of miles away, or he sees no reason to come to the factory. Okay, so one issue is, if you do it remotely, is that the tevel, if you make tevel matzah, they make it out of flour, wheat flour. That's the common thing you make it from. But if the bakery is using rye or spelt or one of the other grains, then you need to have tevel made of that grain also. So if you use tevel dough, then the Mashgiach can make the dough whatever he wants to. If he knows that this bakery uses rye flour, then he'll tell them to make tevel dough out of rye, and he'll be doing a farsha like that. But if he's only doing matzah, the matzah only comes in wheat. It doesn't come in rye or spelt or oats or things like that. And again, since he's doing this remotely, he's not able to just pull out the piece, take a glob of dough out of whatever they're making. If you take a piece of dough, then whatever it is, that's what he made. That's what it is. But if he's doing it remotely, he's got to rely on this kind of a system. It's not so great. Yeah. And Rosh Miller also said there's a question about whether you're allowed to be mafresh from baked goods on raw goods, which is what's going on here. If I do it with tevel matzah, I'm taking a piece of tevel matzah, and that's the hafrasha on dough. And it's a question. In Shmir Shabbos, it says that there's no problem with that at all. Some of us are so convinced, but in Shmir Shabbos, actually, it's okay. Both of this concern that I just mentioned is not a problem with tevel, when you use it tevel dough instead of tevel matzah. Okay. Another thing is, there's another issue that comes back when you use a tevel system, as opposed to just doing good old-fashioned hafrasha, or even dough balls, is that it's being done shalom and hamukov. Mukov means to say is that the piece, the dough that you separate, the challah that you separate, is supposed to be close to the item that's doing hafrasha on, and basically that's impossible. That's close to impossible in a factory. If you use tevel dough, it's truly impossible because tevel dough has to stay in the freezer. Well, there's no freezer in the middle of the baking area. But even if you use tevel matzah, it's going to be in a closed container, and the Gemara says that a closed container is never considered mukov. Okay? There's no way to make it mukha. And he says even if it would be in an open container, it would have to be right next to the baking bowl, which is not going to be. So if a person does hafarsha shloim in a mukha, in the evet, hafarsha works. But seemingly, it's not machatchila. Seemingly, we're telling the Mashiach every single day to do a hafarsha shloim in a mukha because the tevel is not next to the items that are being, the hafarsha is on. So he's losing out on the fact that he's he's basically doing the wrong thing to do Hafarsha Shlomo and Mukov. Now, presumably the justification is that it saves people from eating tevel. It's saving them. But Lamai says it's not this most wonderful idea, which is to have a person continually do Hafarsha Shlomo and Mukov. Okay, and the last thing within this idea of doing it remotely is that if the person, the Mashkiach who's doing it, is doing the Hafrasha, he has to be the Shliach of the person who asked him to do it. He has to be the Shliach of the owner of the baked goods. And that's a problem when there's a problem if he's doing it, it makes it harder for him to be the Shliach of the owner when he's doing it remotely. Well, the first time he can maybe get in contact with the owner, but with time, there are different kind of complications about him being, whether he can actually be the shliach. And one way to avoid those problems is to say that the mashkiach should take ownership of the dough or ownership of the tevel matzah. And then once he takes ownership of that item, of the part that will be separated as challah, then he could say zachal amishloi b'fanav to do the hafarsha for him. He's doing him a favor to do hafarsha for him. It's not costing that person anything because the mashkiach is using his own flour, his own dough, or his own matzah. And therefore, that's a way to avoid this problem. I mean, there are potential problems. It's not so clear if you can do zachal adam if the tevel would belong to the owner of the factory, but if the mashkiach owns the dough, or owns the tevel dough, or owns the tevel matzah, it avoids that problem. It also solves problems of making him a shliach for davar shloi b'olam. If the dough doesn't show up, I'll make you a shliach today to be mafer challah for me. In 5 years from now, you're still doing it. That dough, that the flour that it's made from, wasn't even planted. So it's a real davar shloi b'olam, and it also avoids questions of the mashkiach, the manager who's not Jewish, making you the shliach. If you don't speak to the owner himself. So, but all of these are avoided. The mashkiach owns, takes possession of the dough, or the tevel dough, or the tevel matzah. Okay, now, our last group of issues with the tevel system has to do with the way you do the hafrasha. So, as I read beforehand, this whole long paragraph that the mashkiach has to say in order to make the hafrashas, and he has to say b'li l'raka this way, and b'li l'raka goes this way, and all the details of that, it's a whole to-do. And so there's a question. In Ritzvi Pesach Frank, he says, it applies that he really has to read. He can't just say, I want the hafrasha to work. I want the hafrasha to work. Whatever I'm supposed to say, let it work as per the paragraph. The Chazanish is mashma that he is. It's good enough to just say, I'm doing the hafarsha according to the nusach. Whatever the paper says, that's what I want to do. It could be, there's a possible reading that maybe even Ritzvi Pesach would be maskim in our case, where there's a written version of the nusach, maybe he'd be maskim to that. But that, again, this is a question whether you have to actually say the whole long nusach, or you can maybe get away with just saying, I want to wake up in the morning and say, hi, I want all the farshas to work like it says on the paper. Right now, most hashkochas tell their mashkichim that if they use this tevel system, they should make the bracha like you're supposed to, the good old fish and the bracha the way it's supposed to be. So Rosh Hashanah Miller asked on that there's a mashmois from Magen Avraham, that when you do a mitzvah that's not going to happen live, I mean, I say now that when something happens, when the dough is made in the future, I want there to be a hafrasha. So what I'm saying now, nothing's happening. There's no mitzvah happening now. And when the mitzvah happens, I'm not doing anything. It's like they're sort of separated from each other. Then you don't make a bracha not at the time when I do my thing, and not at the time when the mitzvah happens. And there's a lot of merit to Rosh Hashanah's point, and a way to to allow the person to still make a bracha would be to say, as we said before, instead of saying, I want hafarshas to happen for the future, you would say, I want hafarshas to happen for the past. If we did that, then there would be no problem with saying the bracha. Okay, now, the lastly is that when a person says, is I want to be mafresh, that today's hafarsha should be, the bad should be for the one that's right next to the one that was before, that was done yesterday, that's fine, that's considered, you have to specify where the dough is that you're making the hafarsha, and that this is good enough. Even if you're not being very specific, you're saying next to the one, that's good enough. But Lamaisa, what we're missing out on is that the Ramah says he's supposed to be mafresh kezayis when you do each hafarsha, and here no one's going to be mafresh kezayis. Because if you keep mafresh kezayis every day for every batter, you're going to very quickly run out of tevel. So people mafresh, the way I read it before, and it was a gram. Some people do even less than a gram, but they want it to last a long time. And think about it, a box of matzah holds 454 grams. So you only get 454 batters. That might not last very long in a bakery that does, I don't know, 10, 20 batters a day. Not going to last very long. So some people do even less than a gram. Okay, and another thing is that the Ramah says that the challah needs to be burnt. That's the way to destroy it. Excuse me, most people do not end up actually burning this tevel at the end of the year. Most people instead are Samuel HaNachazanish, who says that if you just destroy it, that's also good enough. But either way, yes, that should happen at the end of the year. Or when the tevel is all used up, let's say you have your like I said, the Casey box of matzah, that's 454 grams. So eventually they've all been used up. All of them have been made into tshuma. At that point, you do need to destroy it and get rid of it and get yourself a new box.